welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, June 15, 2021. Sudan appoints new military governors to address intercommunal violence.
Blue Nile state has been at war for more than 40 years, and therefore some ethnic and cultural changes and differences could be observed. So the first priority of the governor is stability.
And Sudanese authorities arrest South Sudanese refugees involved in intercommunal violence in the capital Khartoum.
On this line, CORE with UNHCR and partners held a meeting with the community leaders, stressing rights and duties of refugees, including that the host country law and order must be respected.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Some civil society activists are raising concerns over the delay in the swearing-in of new members of parliament appointed by President Salva Kiir. Some activists claim the delay is what they call a calculated tactic to weaken the implementation of the peace agreement. For VOA News, Winnie Chirino reports from Juba.
Jamie Kolok, executive director of the local NGO Foundation for Democracy and Accountable Governance, says several laws must be passed to implement reforms stipulated in the revitalized peace agreement. He says delaying the lawmakers' swearing-in delays the deal's implementation.
Right now, we're having conversation on the issue of the constitutional development. That constitutional development-making process requires a legislation. We are talking about transitional justice. The transitional justice process requires legislation. We are talking about reforms. There are a number of security laws that have been reviewed by the National Constitutional Amendment Committee. These have not been passed.
Kolok says failure to swear in newly appointed lawmakers means that South Sudan's leaders are deliberately working to undermine the peace agreement.
If we are committed to implementing the peace agreement, reconstitute the parliament by making sure that the MPs get to the house, they are sworn in, and the business starts. The first thing we need to see from them is pass the budget. The second thing is pass all the legislations that are associated with the peace agreement. The other one is that check the government, make sure that there are no corruption, make sure that we have priorities, make sure that the budget that is being met delivers services to the people of South Sudan.
Moses Mande, executive director for the Organization of Nonviolence and Development, says delaying the swearing-in ceremony also delays the formation of committees within the parliament. He too says parliament must pass several laws in conjunction with the peace deal. He also points out that the Council of States, the upper chamber of South Sudan's parliament, must also be reconstituted.
The Council of State should be reconstituted so that the whole house, you know, is in place, and that they should take an oath of office as soon as possible so that we can have a full three arms of the government in place to begin to offer services. So as people, actually, what we wanted to see happening is that we wanted services to be delivered to the people, and that the three arms of the government should work, you know, side by side.
Government spokesperson Michael Makwes says after President Kiir appointed lawmakers in May, some members of the SPLM party raised several complaints which had to be addressed. He says President Kiir formed a committee to look into the issues raised, and the committee submitted its report to the president. Makwes says there were also delays caused by the National Agenda Group headed by Martin Elia Lumuru and the Democratic Change Group headed by Onyoti Adigo because they did not submit their list of nominees on time. Makwes says the other political parties' team also had problems.
The agreement gave them 30 seats. These 30 seats, I think, were not properly allocated. And as a result, there came up a very serious complaint from the membership of the OPP. And OPP by itself is 20 political parties, as I said, but also of six groups. So one of the groups, I think, took over the 30 and left out the other five groups. And that is another problem which was pending, not resolved. These were the main reasons which led to the delay. And I think by this time, All the issues must have been addressed by now.
Makwe says since the issues have been addressed, lawmakers should be sworn in any time now. He says the SPLM gave the other parties time to resolve their in-house issues so that they should not accuse President Kiru's SPLM party of interfering in their affairs. Makwe says the president might swear in those lawmakers whose names have been submitted and leave the rest. He also says the delay in the swearing-in of MPs is not the issue, since some laws are still in the hands of the National Constitution Amendment Committee, which are then turned over to the Minister for Justice, then the Cabinet, and finally to the Parliament. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
The United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees says it is working with legal partners to monitor the situation of more than 500 South Sudanese refugees who were jailed for engaging in intercommunal violence in Khartoum last month. UNHCR's External Relations Officer in Sudan says among the 112 arrested, 80 were charged with breaching peace and security, a crime that is punishable by 1 month in detention. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Akol Malong, a South Sudanese human rights activist in Khartoum, told South Sudan in Focus in May that Sudanese Judiciary Authority had sentenced 600 South Sudanese refugees in Khartoum to 6 months in prison after they were found guilty of engaging in intercommunal fighting, which led to the deaths of 7 people and left 22 others wounded in the Soba and Hajusif residential area of Khartoum during the Eid al-Fitr holiday. Malong said the trouble started when two South Sudanese refugees' communities clashed over a marriage-related issue. She said a family in one community became outraged when they discovered their daughter eloped with a man from another community. Malong said, along with serving 6 months in jail, each convicted person must pay a fine of 20,000 Sudanese pounds. She says the court also ordered the convict to return to South Sudan after serving their sentences. But Gulien Rafahili, UNHCR Senior External Relations Officer in Sudan, says no deportation of South Sudanese refugees was ordered by the Sudanese court. Rafahili says her office and other legal entities in Khartoum are working closely with Sudanese authorities concerning the refugees in Sudan. She says her office recently met with community leaders to enlighten them about the roles and duties of refugees in hopes of preventing further violence among refugees in Khartoum.
On this line, CORE with UNHCR and partners held a meeting with the community leaders stressing rights and duties of refugees, including that the host country law and order must be respected, and underlining the refugee leaders' critical active role in preventing such incidents and resolve tensions peacefully through traditional conflict resolution mechanism, which is generally very efficient and successful among South Sudanese.
Rafahili says Sudan hosts hundreds of thousands of refugees, and the majority of them are South Sudanese.
More than 300,000 refugees are hosted in Khartoum, out of which nearly 200,000 are from South Sudan. In total, Sudan is home to about 1.1 million refugees and 2.55 million internally displaced.
Rafahili says UNHCR continues to work with partners and comes to promote peaceful coexistence among South Sudanese refugees in Sudan. She says UNHCR advocates for refugees' access to national service to improve refugees' living condition and to integrate them into areas of Khartoum. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
Still in Khartoum, Sudanese Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok has appointed 3 military governors for West Darfur, Northern Darfur, and Blue Nile states in accordance with the provisions of the Juba peace deal. The Prime Minister instructed the appointed governors to crush the ongoing intercommunal conflicts in the 3 states and work with local leaders to reconcile communities. For VOA News, Michael Atit has more from Khartoum.
Hamdok relieved Muhammad Abdullah Duma from his post as governor of West Darfur State and appointed General Khamis Abdullah Abubakr as his replacement. He also fired Northern Darfur Governor Muhammad Hassan Arabi, replacing him with Nimir Muhammad Abdulrahman, and appointed General Ahmed Al-Umda Badi as the governor of Blue Nile State. Hamdok directed the newly appointed military governors to collaborate with local community leaders and build social cohesion among different communities. He says the ongoing intercommunal conflicts in the Darfur region should come to an end so that the Juba peace deal can be fully implemented. Speaking to reporters in Khartoum Sunday evening, a member of the Sovereign Council, General Malik Agar, welcomed the move to appoint military governors in accordance with the Juba peace deal. General Agar says years of fighting in the Blue Nile region has halted development projects and created uneven service delivery to local citizens. He urged Governor Badi to stabilize the region and provide communities with services.
Blue Nile State has been at war for more than 40 years, and therefore some ethnic and cultural changes and differences could be observed. So the first priority of the governor is stability, and to achieve stability there is a need for internal reconciliation.
Agar noted that the Blue Nile region contributed positively to the history of the ancient Sudan due to its geographical location and environmental features. He says some of its natural resources remain untouched due to instability in Sudan.
This is an important region, and if it's stable, it will help stabilize the whole Sudan. Any insecurity there will negatively affect the national security. This region has a huge natural resources such as agriculture and minerals, and if these resources are utilized in a good way, it will contribute to the Sudanese economy.
Last month, Prime Minister Hamdok appointed Mini Arko Minawi, the leader of a faction of the Darfuri-based armed group Sudan Liberation Movement, as regional governor for Darfur in accordance with the Juba peace deal. Minawi earlier vowed to work with traditional leaders in the region to reconcile communities and build social cohesion among various tribes. Minawi pointed out that over the past several months in Darfur, thousands of civilians have been displaced from their homes, while others have been killed in intercommunal clashes. He says it is time for displaced persons to return to their villages and engage in farming and other activities aimed at developing the region.
We will strive to work with traditional leaders, the national government, the Darfuri tribal leaders, governors, and all our relatives, wherever they might be, to stop the bloodshed in Darfur, and more particularly to stop the continuous tribal clashes that keep on occurring every now and then.
Intercommunal fighting was rampant in the Darfur region after the joint United Nations and African Union's peacekeeping mission left the region in December last year. Hundreds of civilians have been killed and wounded and property destroyed. According to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in Sudan, more than 80,000 new displacements have occurred within the last 6 months alone in Darfur. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, how is Kenya tackling eye diseases? That story is lined up after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how does your family take care of an elderly relative?
Once in a while, we sit down with him, speak with him, ask him how he's doing so he doesn't feel lonely. Then we also tell him about what is going on in the world so that he doesn't feel left out.
We make sure we provide the basic needs like food, water, make her happy, not to feel rejected. Because when they are growing and you start to abandon them, they see that they are not needed. And showing them love even brings them healing.
Helping them with the domestic chores, for example, preparing meals for them. Helping them with the clothes, cleaning up the house.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You You are listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. And in our Tuesday's health segment, we take a closer look at bacterial infections that could affect your eyes. Close to 7 million Kenyans are living in areas at risk of contracting trachoma, a bacterial infection that is a leading cause of blindness in Africa. Trachoma is one of the most neglected yet easily preventable disease that causes blindness, and Kenya is working to prevent its spread. For VOA News, Brenda Molinya reports from Nairobi.
As Elizabeth Patote sits outside a clinic in Kajiado County in Kenya, she stares unseeingly into the dry and brittle spaces outside the health facility. In a few minutes, a surgeon will carry out a corrective eye operation and allow the more than 70-year-old woman to see clearly for the first time in over a decade. She is one of thousands of people in Kenya who have either lost or are gradually losing their sight due to trachoma. She says, "My eyes have been bothering me because I have grown old. The lashes are always getting into my eyes, causing me a lot of pain. My granddaughter has been helping, removing them physically with her fingers, but it is very painful." Trachoma, an infectious disease, is caused by bacteria that attack the inner surfaces of the eyelids. Dr. Peter Ekwom, an eye surgeon who has been carrying out trachoma surgeries in Kajiado County, says sight loss from trachoma is preventable but irreversible if not treated in time.
Every time you blink, the eyelashes rub on the corneas. And with the time, they peel off the first layer of the cornea, which results to an ulcer. Now, the ulcer is very painful, but at the end of the day, the ulcer will heal and leaves a scar.
That repeated scarring of the eye's cornea eventually impairs vision and often leads to irreversible blindness. About 7 million people live in 12 central Kenyan counties where trachoma is endemic because of a dry climate and the pastoral and nomadic lifestyle there. About 53,000 people are currently infected with the disease. Like other countries affected by trachoma, Kenya had wanted to eliminate it by 2020, the World Health Organization's target. The target date has now been moved to 2023. Dr. Ernest Baraza, Kenya's National Trachoma Coordinator, explains.
So the way forward for the Kenya Trachoma Elimination Program is to clear the remaining trachoma trichiasis backlog, which stands at around 5,000 at the moment. That is 5,000 people who require urgent surgery to avert blindness in the 12 trachoma endemic counties.
To eradicate trachoma, experts say people in areas prone to the disease must take greater precautions. Most of the communities at risk are nomadic, sometimes living with their livestock.
Flies breed because of the dung and urine. And then because the flies are breeding, every time there is a discharge in a child's face, the bacteria is carried from the child to the mother.
Kenya's plans to defeat trachoma depends on donors for the money for detection, treatment, and prevention programs. Only with more contributions, Kenya says, will it be able to eliminate the disease. Brenda Molinya for VOA News, Nairobi.
Still on health issues, June 14 is World Blood Donor Day, and medical authorities in Cameroon are pleading for blood donors after a dramatic drop in the donations over the past year. Donations fell by half in 2020 and nearly by half again so far this year, worsening the country's blood shortage. For VOA News, Muki Edwin Kinsika reports from the capital, Yaounde.
Officials in Cameroon point to 32-year-old Alphonse Soutia as a good example of a determined voluntary blood donor. Chia says he became a blood donor when he witnessed an incident in which medical staff could not help save the life of a child. He says he started donating blood in February after he watched helplessly as a 6-year-old boy died of severe anemia in the central hospital in Yaoundé. He says the medical staff members on duty told him that the blood bank was dry and there was no one to donate blood to save the child's life. Chia says he was being treated for malaria at the hospital and could not donate blood at the time. He says since then, he has joined an association called Green Hearts that donates blood to people in need. Cameroon says it needs 400,000 pints of blood each year to meet the medical needs of its 25 million people. But in 2020, people donated just 48,000 units of blood, down from 103,000 units in 2019. The Central African State says blood donations have fallen again so far this year. Dorangumsu Mbanya is Director General of Cameroon's National Blood Transfusion Center. She says COVID-19 scares people from donating blood.
With the COVID pandemic in 2020, there was a deficit of 44% in blood donation. What we gathered is that COVID had a huge impact on blood donation. WHO set out criteria whereby if you are a recovered person from COVID-19, you are allowed a month or so after recovery before you could be eligible to donate.
Vanya says popular myths surrounding blood donation and transfusion are also an obstacle.
There are those who think that you take their blood and do witchcraft with it, and so they cannot donate their blood. There are those with religious beliefs that you can't take blood from one person and give to the next person. Those kind of people will not want to donate blood, since they would not even receive it. And so we want to encourage our young people to step forward and take leadership roles in promoting health in our nation through blood donation.
With Cameroon battling a separatist crisis in two western regions, Boko Haram attacks in the north, and occasionally spillover of violence from the Central African Republic, the government says the need for blood to treat wounded civilians and fighters is higher than ever. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
From Yaoundé, we move back to South Sudan, where environmental activists in Central Equatorial State say Yei County continues to witness massive logging that could impact on the environment. Some residents of Yei Town have planted trees to combat potential effects of climate change due to cutting of trees. For VOA News, Daniel Friday Martin reports from Yei.
In a report released last month, USAID said the illegal timber industry simultaneously threatens the world's forest and steals from local communities that rely on forests for food, health, and wealth. The report said the exploitation of forests also makes land even more vulnerable to deforestation for other uses. Environmental activists in Yei have repeatedly blamed local government officials for not doing enough to protect the environment, as the area's forests have been destroyed, posing long-term threats to the well-being of people and animals in the area. Victor Batali is the Executive Director for Forest Conservation Association in South Sudan.
We used to experience rain from Feb exactly, but this year we experienced rain towards the end of May. Why? Because many of the trees were harvested. They were all cut down. And two, we have already exposed our soil into danger of soil erosion. So we are endangering our lives too. And even our animals, many of these animals are moving out because we have already harvested these trees.
Batali says environmental activists will conduct civic education programs on the dangers of cutting down trees, as well as the benefits of planting trees, on radio programs. Environmentalist Mike Gaga says his group has planted several varieties of trees, including more than 2,000 tree seedlings this past week, as part of their contribution to fight climate change around Yei Town.
We decided to involve ourselves by providing the expertise and the seedlings. Climate change is real. We need to come collectively and we respond. People should not cut down trees.
Gaga says trees were planted at the former state secretariat headquarters, prison and police department, the Yei Medical Training Institute, Yei River County headquarters, Yei Day Secondary School, Emmanuel Model Secondary School, St. Paul Primary School, Yei Teachers Training College, Jigomoni Primary School, the Haileben area, Kabat area, Market Streets of Dar Salaam, and the Lomuku Residential area. Regina Mina, a resident of Yei's Haileben neighborhood, says she is using the rainy season to plant different varieties of fruit and set trees in her plot to reduce the negative impact of climate change.
My message to my fellow citizens in Yei in particular and South Sudan in general is that trees are important in our lives. We need to plant trees to retain our green vegetation and also get fresh and clean oxygen.
Justason Victor, executive director of the local NGO Yamora, is also taking part in the campaign to encourage tree planting in Yei town.
Cut one tree and you plant five. So we need to enforce this. So we expect the government to put restrictions on this illegal logging of the trees.
Jido Simon is director of the Department of Forestry and Environment in Yei River County. Jido insists the local government has introduced strict laws that prohibit the illegal logging of trees in the area.
Cutting one tree, you have to plant five trees from five to above. We have to stop cutting the trees down anyhow. It has to be assessed first before you file down the trees.
Some residents and environmental activists say Yei and neighboring counties have lost control over their natural vegetation, forest reserves and natural trees due to rampant illegal logging that has gone unchecked as a result of years of conflict in the area. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin in Yei Town.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
That's all we prepared for you today. We'd love to hear what you think about this program. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. We'll now leave you with the song Nasir by Gordon Kong. Listening to Gordon Kong and the song Nasir. I'm John Tanza. Thanks for being part of our evening. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing and wear a mask when you're in public places to protect you and others from getting COVID-19. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine center because there is no cure for coronavirus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Ada fel ni bala yey we dan ko kolong ti ro aja ken du e twa di jung ken bana we jol we mon bada ko far wa yoga bana ji jang ga yan dan ji kai na sare we dan cha bam do de yan da banen to ba sare we ni bana ten na